The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back here to Freedom 106.5 FM. Attorney at Law Fareed Ali is on the line with me this morning as we kick off this interview here this morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, David. It's good to see you. It's good to be here again.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show with me. You know, one of the things that we are facing right now is two things on the horizon. I know one is the SOE. The SOE has ended over how many days it was for, boy? Can't even remember right now.
But the 31st of December.
To present, right.
To present, which should be about, what, 3.5 months?
Yeah.
3.5 months.
Almost 100 days or something, so. Something to that, because 90 days, yeah. Could be a wrong day. What is the possibility with the persons who were released yesterday? We have 39 of them released yesterday and a further 15 to go before the courts this morning at 9 o'clock. What do you anticipate next for these 39 released detainees?
The issue that surrounds their detention is whether the state's actions under the Emergency Powers Ordinance were justified. And the answer to that is yes. Once we've invoked the Emergency Powers Ordinance, right, it suspends the rule of law as it speaks to probable cause and reasonable grounds to arrest someone. In other words, your liberty has been suspended, and all our liberty, that includes you and me. So the police could have randomly, and if I may say, use a strong word, arbitrarily, come to our homes, stop us while we're in our vehicles, and proceed to search. Now, for people who have cocoa in the sun, you know, they may be impacted most by that. And for people that don't, it's a mere inconvenience. But to answer your question in a succinct manner, these 39 individuals who've been released, they returned to their homes. I had three clients of mine that were released around after three yesterday afternoon, Sunday. And they resumed their regular living, uninterrupted by the ad hoc powers handed over to the police and the defense force to go into their homes and search or to detain them and question them. This state of emergency, and as previous states of emergencies encapsulated, it's a short-term quick fix measure that carries a placebo effect. And the placebo effect is simply this: psychologically, it plays on the minds of the citizens that, you know, we need not worry. The defense force, the Trinidad-Tobago Police Service, has been given advanced powers or enhanced powers, heightened powers, where they can act without having any limitation to how they conduct their affairs, in terms of they could enter your homes, they could use force, they can, in a very, very untoward manner, search your premises, go in your bed, open your wardrobe, go in your vault, go into your phones if it is their rescue. And they don't have to worry about the legal effect of somebody claiming that their constitutional right to life, liberty, security, personal enjoyment of property is violated. But like all things, it comes to an end. And I was mentioning the placebo effect is psychologically the population breathed for 90 days. They breathe for 3.5 months, telling themselves that advance action is being taken on strategic persons. But the question remains is, where do we go from now? As of today, The police are back to square one. They take the reality has set in now. If they want to go and arrest Davey, if they want to go and arrest Farid Ali, they must now have a reasonable basis for doing so. They must conduct an investigation. The investigation must prove that we are involved in something illegal, or there's reason to believe that we're involved in something illegal. There has to be a factual basis that they're acting on, and they must have correspondingly reasonable grounds to believe that we are involved, because they can't just have a hunch or a notion or a feeling that, you know, we have something illegal in the house. They must actually have empirical data based on investigation that there is something illegal that we are in possession of before they can come to our homes. So in the same breath, what it means today is that the criminal, the so-called criminal gangster gang member out there, he feels a certain level of empowerment this morning that, you know, I could have my gun under my bed. They can't just burst in. They had to come with a warrant. When Gary Griffith, and I mean, of all persons, I'm quoting Gary Griffith, but when Gary Griffith says that, you know, he doesn't believe in states of emergency, that or state of emergencies, that is, that it is a last resort, it's a stopgap measure. It means to say that part of your policing tools that the TTPS has at their disposal, it's regular investigations and investigations that are intelligence-based, simply meaning that if you're investigating somebody who you suspect is involved in gang violence or who is conspiring to murder, that you have intelligence that and meaningful factual data that points to the fact that they are involved. It's not a question of you're working on hunches, because the law as it stands today, as it stood 3.5 plus 1 days before yesterday, was that before you can arrest anybody, you must have a reasonable basis in law, a factual basis in law, and reason to believe that the person that you're investigating is involved. And if you can't satisfy that factual basis through investigation and have a reasonable and unreasonable grounds believe somebody's involved based on the facts, you can't go to their premises and you can't break down the door and you can't enter the homes and violate that constitutional right to life, liberty, security, personal enjoyment of property. Our Constitution, Section 4, speaks succinctly to a person's constitutional right to freedom. And that freedom is something that is sacred and something that is available to the criminal, to the prime minister, to the president, to the businessman, to the radio announcers, to the media people, to anybody. In other words, a criminal is on equal standing as far as his rights are concerned with anybody else, even when he's a known criminal. So the Constitution, Section 4, talks about one has there's an existent right regardless of one's origin, color, religion, sex, to equal treatment before the law and protection of the law. So the criminal, he has the same rights as you and I to protection of the law and to be treated equally in the same manner that any other citizen ought to be treated. So a state of emergency suspends that right. It impacts, it directly impacts upon him. That portion of the law, that section of the Constitution, Section 4B, which speaks to the right of an individual to equality before the law and protection of the law, that is suspended during a state of emergency. And that right that the individual would have to life, liberty, security, personal enjoyment of property, and the right not to be deprived except by due process of law. Due process of law is impacted also during a state of emergency.
But then, based on what you're saying, right, I don't mean to cut you, but based on what you're saying, is that under the SOE, a lot of things would have been suspended. As you mentioned, they could run in your place. So simply, the country is in uproar, thinking that we will have to spend millions of dollars in dealing with the repercussions and the fallout from those detainees who were not charged and had to be released. Now, here's something that is boggling, it's mind-boggling to me right now. When you come into my premises, if I was working somewhere, I have a job, and I was working, 39 of them. I saw some, out of that 39, at least two of them had a job. I just, plain devil's advocate. While I am locked up, what's happening with my employment? I am locked up. My employers, because the police ain't going to call you, have him under arrest. He's being detained at this time, so he can't come to work. So your employees will see that as an abandonment of the job. And in some instances, if nobody gets to the employer to tell them, you could very well be unemployed because you have abandoned your job. Can these persons like those, can they seek redress from the state and be compensated? And then what about the employers, when they do get released? You mentioned that they're going back living their life as normal. But if I was employed, like I am here at Guardian Media, and under the SOE, then pick me up, and no family member was able, I couldn't get to nobody to tell my employers at Guardian I'm not there. They will see that I abandoned the job. They can't reach me on the phone because the state has my phone, so they can't reach me, and my family may not be around. And maybe a month later, they might find out, well, you know, Davey get hold or something under the SOE. But it would have been seen by the management of Guardian Media Limited that I've abandoned my position here at Freedom 106.5 as an announcer. So what happens in those instances where persons are held under the SOE, their rights were infringed upon because of the state of emergency? Now you release me. How do I get back to some form of normalcy, as you mentioned?
You know, bear in mind that a lot of these so-called gangsters have state contracts. They're contractors. So they're probably employees of the state. The powers that may have bestowed upon them are contractors to fix Box Drain in Laventil.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're presuming that they have regular jobs like you and me, where we are accountable to an employer. These guys are 4 months of their own job. They get a state contract for $1.5 million.
But all right. So that is the gangsters, right? But remember, we said anybody can be picked up during an SOE. It's not like now where you have to have empirical data, evidence, research. You have to do your homework before you lock up Fareed Ali or Davey Murray. But in the SOE, up to yesterday afternoon, they could have just run in your place. They could have just said they get intel, you know. Where they get it from? Who could question them? They get intel.
Well, they don't even need to have intel.
Exactly.
That's the point of it. You don't need intel.
Right. So they run in my place and they pick me up. They pick you up. What is our recourse? Is it that the state will then have to pay, or do we have to go through lawsuits in order to get this done? And then how do we get out? How does the state, the state isn't getting involved, but how do we get our employers to recognize we were wrongfully detained by the state during this time here? How do we get back our jobs? So the question I'm basically asking you, outside of these alleged gangsters or gang affiliate members, regular citizens was also subjected to this SOE and could have been picked up. If that happened, is it that they could have then gotten some kind of redress on this? What would have been the next recourse? As an attorney, how can you advise?
What I can say is this. Based on what I've read in the editorial in the newspaper, the police are indicating that they focused and targeted persons known to them. So what they would have us believe is those 49 persons that were detained under the state of emergency ordinance, those 49 persons are persons known to be involved in criminal activity. So they seem to signal to us that these are career criminals. Now, to answer your question, if it is regular people working Guardian Media and working PTSC and working in other private firms, companies, and so on, were arrested, then it is likely that the employers would have been informed, because when you're arrested, your family has the right, or you as an individual has the right to inform your relatives that you're in the care of the police. Because, you know, were they to just snatch you and grab you, take you to the Eastern Correctional Facility in Arima, Santa Rosa, and detain you there without your relatives knowing, then they may be thinking that you're missing. You're one of those 60 persons that disappear every year. On average, 60 persons disappear in this country every year. You're one of those 60 persons that disappear, or possibly maybe one of the 30 that are never to be found ever again. So in law, once you've been detained or you've been arrested, even in these times, then your family has to be informed, right? You also have the right to an attorney. So if it is these individuals have attorneys, and very often they do, they have an attorney on alert.
On retainer. On alert, so to speak. On retainer.
So they quite within their right to say, I would like to hear from my attorney. I would like to see my attorney. In my case, three of my clients were there, and I received calls from the welfare department at the Eastern Correctional Facility where my clients asked to see me. So you're allowed a phone call. So it means that your employer would get an opportunity to your family to be informed that you were detained.
Okay.
Now, with regard to redress, in a very succinct manner, if it is under the Emergency Powers Ordinance you were detained, the state, on face value, has the right to detain you if you're known to the police in some way. And being known to the police is known to be involved in criminal activity, known to be associating with gang members, known to be keeping the company of persons who are known to be in criminal activity. In other words, the police must justify that you are known in that regard. Now, if they can't, and they just randomly, arbitrarily pick you up, on face value, they could do that. But at the same time, if it is you have no criminal record and you're not known to be associated with anything criminal or persons known to be involved in criminality, then the state has to take that extra step to justify why they held you. In reality, I am not saying that the 39 or the 49 persons that were arrested, the 39 who have been released, have no redress. They very well may have some redress. But I believe, based on what I'm reading, that charges, though it was preferred on 14 persons, sometime before yesterday or leading into today's this morning, they will be appearing before court. We receive information through the editorial of the newspaper that other persons are going to be charged, or those persons who were detained are going to be charged over the course of the next few months.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, one strategy the police uses is when they detain you for a sustained and protracted period of time. And I'm saying sustained and protracted in this instance. If once they detain you, they arrest you, and your freedom is suspended under attestation, they tend to lay a charge. By laying a charge, it could be any frivolous charge. And when I say frivolous charge, from summary offenses to indictable offenses, it means to say that they've justified your detention. Now, what you can get them on is, if it is they arrest you for loitering, right? You're sitting on a bench 2 o'clock in the morning around the savannah. The police stop, they ask you what you're doing there, and you can't offer a reasonable explanation. They can arrest you for the offense of loitering because you have not been able to satisfy the police why you were sitting there. Now, a reasonable explanation might be I'm an insomniac. I can't sleep. And I decided, you know, I'd rather sit on a bench around the savannah breathing fresh air than lying on my bed all night staring at the ceiling, wondering what it'll be like to be lying on the ceiling, staring at the bed. So the long and short of it is that when we examine the circumstances of the detained individuals, the police, in saying that all charges will be laid against the others over the next few months, it's their way of saying that I didn't just randomly arrest them. We've arrested them, and we believe that they were involved in something that is uniquely criminal, and we are going to lay a charge. By laying a charge, they're covering their backs in the sense that they're justifying that we have that there was a reason for holding them. So they find something to charge them for. What happened in the 2011 state of emergency? Some officers said when the matters went before the court that they basically profiled individuals, arrested them, and then proceeded to find something to charge them for. In other words, there was no reasonable basis or no factual basis for arresting them. They simply profile them because their pants falling off the waistline, the drawers showing. They look in gangsterish. They're diamond on Duncan Street. So what good law-abiding citizen would be on Duncan Street if he pants for an off, he waste and rubbers because. So they lock you up. The police are saying at that stage now when they arrest you, based on profiling or based on the community you come from, or the way you look, or the way you talk, the way you address the police when they approach you, they then try to find something to charge you for. It could be loitering. I'm just using loitering as an example. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If it is you tell the police, but where are you coming up in my face for? Where are you coming around me? They might want to arrest you now for assaulting an officer. And assaulting an officer is simply causing the officer to feel fearful, you know, based on your actions and the things that you say. Or based on the fact that you're pointing in their direction with your hands flailing all over the place so they feel threatened. So they find things to charge you for, assault. They try to arrest you and you pull away, just simply pulling away. It's resisting. You don't need to pull away and run. You simply pull away and you stand up right and they're locked up for resisting. So what I'm saying is the police to cover themselves may very well prefer charges, simple charges against any of those 39 persons. Simply to say, well, you know what, we approach them and based on how they conducted themselves, we have to lay charges of various nature. Now, one is entitled in law, Davey, to, upon being arrested and a charge being laid, to be taken before a court and have a prompt hearing. A prompt hearing is a hearing for bail. Under a state of emergency, one could be taken to court at any point in time. Remember, your liberty is suspended. And you may be that, but the mere fact that they have had to prefer a charge to investigate you in relation to a particular charge, loitering, assault, battery, grievous bodily harm, resisting arrest, breach of the public peace, that may trigger the need to conduct further investigations surrounding you. So, one thing leads to the next, it's the domino effect.
All right. We're going to keep you on the line with us after the 8 o'clock hour and the sport report that comes up right after the 8 o'clock news. You have mentioned some things there that is real frightening and concerning to me. Those of you listening, not able to see Attorney Ali, his gestures as we have this Zoom line going, but we'll talk in the next hour. Most definitely. And your phone calls will be up next. Continuing our discussion here with Attorney at Law Fareed Ali as we come off of what is happening on page 5, occupying serious real estate on page 5 of our Guardian of Democracy this morning, where 39 detainees released from the SOE, which is the state of emergency that ended on April 13, which was yesterday. All right. So yesterday, that's it. From midnight last night into this morning, it's a different era. Hello, good morning, caller. Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, this morning I want to deal with the senior counsel who leave the UNC and go across to PNN. I want to tell him to tell the population what post he was given or what post he was offered if they win this election. I also want them to tell the population, explain the property tax, the ripple effect it will have on the population when they can't pay the property tax 5 years from now. And we have a next one who was in Sipal Air Council. He also come down on the UNC. He was speaking on the platform of black dignity, how the black people don't get in nothing to achieve. I want to know if young is a black man, and if he's going to support that instead of supporting Pedro Beckles, who was a foundation member of the PNM, I thank you.
All right, thank you very much for your call this morning. I appreciate your concerns. We will probably address that in the next 30 minutes of the show. As we continue with Attorney at Law Fareed Ali here this morning, you know, you mentioned a lot of things in the last hour about the constitutional rights of persons being infringed upon once a state of emergency is enforced. However, you did mention that the police, if the breeze blow hard by you and they know something with you, they could just pick you up. They don't need no warrant. So is it categorically clear at this time? Can we say it's clear that those 39 detainees that were released, that we don't have to be fearful or worried about any backlash or any lawsuits where it's going to cost the taxpayers money in the long run? Is it a done deal? They were released and that's it? Or do we have to worry that coming up in the not too distant future, we can start to see these lawsuits coming up, and maybe 3 years down the road, who get $500,000, who get 1.2, who get, you know, are we going to see these type of things, or do we not have to worry?
More than likely, once they can afford an attorney, the attorney would prepare a pre-action letter highlighting the abuses that they would have suffered or they may have suffered whilst they were in the care of the police or where they were in the care of the prison, which is the ECRC in Santa Rosa and the Golden Grove facility in Aruba. More than likely, when they were detained, apart from their freedom being suspended, their liberty, meaning that they can't leave, they're in the care of the prison, there are other rights that are not suspended under a state of emergency. Your liberty may be suspended, but your right to practice your religion. If you're Islamic and they're not giving you meals that are consistent with what a Muslim is supposed to eat, meaning that they're not giving you halal food. If it is you are a diabetic and you're supposed to be on medication and you have to receive your insulin every day or your insulin-related tablets every day and you didn't receive it on time. These are the areas that the attorneys will be zeroing on. The attorney knows that if it is they walk the route of I am seeking redress for the unlawful detention of my client, that they may have a very weak plank to stand on, given the fact that the state of emergency justified the suspension of one's liberty by way of freedom of movement. The areas to focus on would be where, though their liberty would have been curtailed, and they were by no choice had to remain at the nation's prison or the correctional facility. There were other rights that went, though your liberty has been detained, your liberty has been curtailed and you're detained. Other rights that ought to have been obeyed, and that is the right to practice one's religion and rights arising out of same. So if it is you were beaten by prison officers whilst you were in custody, then that in itself is a violation of your person. The police, the prison officers will have to justify why it is you had to use unreasonable force or unlawful force. What I could tell you this is that when I was speaking with a few of my clients who were there, they said much effort was being made by prison officers not to lay hands on them. In other words, you don't want to create a circumstance where something occurs and one has to use force, and then you turn around now and say, well, I've suffered injury and I wasn't given proper medical care. So you beat a man, you don't take him to the hospital, he develops an abscess, he develops some sort of medical situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That in itself may trigger the need for legal action. So in answering your question, the next few weeks, days into weeks, is going to tell those individuals if they were sensible, if they are sensible. I would be checking myself into a public health facility right now if I were one of the 39 released yesterday. And I would demonstrate my symptoms. I would be getting pain in the back of my ears and pain down in my throat and pain in my hip and asthmatic conditions would it would manifest itself. I would get serious dizzy spells and I'd have to be hospitalized. And born out of the diagnosis and the prognosis moving forward, then my attorney would act accordingly. So I accept that you have me. You have to detain me. The state of emergency ordinance indicates that they could arrest me because I'm known to have friends who involved in criminal things, or maybe I had a criminal past. But you know, I can't wash myself. I can't wash those sins away, although I'd give up my life. And the police detained my rights. You have the right to detain me, you do. But you know what? You didn't have a right to deny me medication. You shouldn't have beat me. You shouldn't have denied me my right to practice my religion. And there are other rights an individual may have. And those rights are laid out in the Constitution. You know? It talks about a right of an individual to equality of treatment from any public authority in the exercise of any function. So not because I am a known gangster, you're going to deny me on time because I'm entitled to breakfast, lunch, and dinner. If I got no breakfast and I get lunch and dinner, well, that's a violation of my human right. Well, what if it is my ulcerated stomach act up because I didn't get my morning breakfast? What if it is you give me tea with milk and I lactose intolerant? So, I mean, the suits will come. It will come.
All right.
It must come.
So one texter is saying, Davey, your guest is contradicting himself. He said the police will find a charge for you when arrested. That stands to reason that you were arrested for no valid reason. That's one. Also, you have persons that were arrested and released without charge. There must be some redress for that. You simply can't arrest and hold persons without charging them. That amounts to abuse of authority. Now, let's talk about the arrest. But before we talk about it, let's take a quick break. The arrest I want to ask you about is, can police arrest you without charging? And if your answer to that is yes, what are the circumstances mitigating that? How long can they hold you before they charge you? And if they're not charging you, when is it constitutionally right for them to release you? We take a break. Those are questions we will address coming back. Also, what's the difference between a regular prisoner, a remanded prisoner that is, and a SOE prisoner? We'll take a break.
Engage with Davey on the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5. Shake up your morning with the Morning Rumble on Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Once again, good morning and welcome back. 627-3223 and 625-2257. Also, you can WhatsApp me at 306-1065. One texter is saying, I'm fed up of hearing the rights of criminals. What about the rights of each and every victim of these criminals? That's a good question. So we were talking very quickly as we continue our discussions here with Fareed Ali, the attorney at law. Let's talk a little bit about how long can a police officer arrest you without charging you? One, that's the first question. What are the ramifications or circumstances surrounding officers? What is the scope that they can work within if they arrest you and they didn't charge you before it would be deemed unconstitutional that they held you infringing on your rights? So they can arrest you. But what is the duration stipulated by law that they have to lay a charge? And if they don't lay the charge, then they have to release you. And with that time frame, there's nothing that you could do about it to seek redress. You know, let's clear up those issues, those misconceptions.
There's no legislation in place in this country, no law in place in this country that states the exact period for which the police can detain you or the exact time frame in which the police can detain you when arrested. But the court, in making rulings in the past when this issue arose, indicated that once you're arrested, that 2 days is a reasonable period. 2 days is a reasonable period for you to be detained. However, it doesn't mean to say that once arrested, the police can hold you for 48 hours because the court says 2 days is a reasonable period. 2 days is simply, the court said 2 days is a reasonable period for by way of reference. But that is a court ruling. That is not law. So law is what exists in paper in terms of legislation that is passed. We don't have any legislation that speaks to what is a reasonable period. In England, there's what you call the Police and Criminal Evidence Act that says that that you could only be detained for 24 hours. And if you are held beyond 24 hours, or to be held more than 24 hours, you must get permission, leave of the court, to hold you for an additional 24. And then further leave of the court to hold you for an additional 24. In other words, every 24 hours, the police in England must seek permission from the court to hold you a bit longer. Now, in Trinidad, we don't have that. So what the court has done in the past in looking at situations where persons were detained is they have said that 2 days is a generally acceptable period for detaining someone. However, if it is you arrest someone and you realize that you arrested the wrong individual, you arrested a man who looks like, who fits the profile of the person you're really looking for, and then you recognize that you have the wrong man, then you can't say you're holding him for 2 days, you ought to release him. So when you arrest somebody, if it is you have the right man, then you ought to determine whether there's a basis in law for holding him, because you don't want to just arrest the man that you heard is involved in something criminal or may have committed something criminal. And then when you question him, you realize that he has a clear alibi, meaning that the offense of which you heard that he committed, meaning, let's say I had an instance where one of my clients was arrested and under suspicion having committed a murder in Trinidad. And he said I couldn't because I was in Tobago, and he produced documentation, tickets to show that he flew out of Trinidad Friday. This man died on a Saturday. And my client was out of Trinidad on the Friday and returned on the Sunday. So that clear alibi, they released him. So in answering your question, 48 hours is what the court recognizes as a reasonable period. But the police must still justify when they hold you, even for 5 hours, even for 2 hours, that there's a reasonable basis for holding you. It can't be just an arbitrary lockup. In a state of emergency, it could be as random and arbitrary as, you know, we just pick you up based on you are known to be a mischievous kind of guy, and therefore we detain you. Now, somebody said earlier that I was contradicting myself. Allow me to say this. I said that you can be arbitrarily arrested during a state of emergency in terms of they profile you, meaning you're on Duncan Street, you're in a hot spot, it's irregular hours, and they profile you and they arrest you. It could be as random and as arbitrary as that. But what they have said, the police are saying that the people they targeted, those 50 persons, were persons known to the police. So in other words, they're known to be involved in criminal things. So don't get me wrong when I say that, you know, one can be arbitrarily arrested, but at the same time, only known persons known to the police are to be arrested. The distinction that the police created is that in this state of emergency, in order to avoid lawsuits and to avoid arbitrary suspension of a man's rights, they targeted persons they knew to be involved in something criminal.
What is irregular hours?
When you say regular hours, you're referring to what?
Irregular. You mentioned you're seen on Duncan Street during irregular hours.
All right. No, I simply mean this. If it is you can't, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, if it's 3 o'clock in the morning, there isn't some sort of public activity taking place on that street. And I'm using Duncan, it could be any place, right? It could be by the Dial in Arima. It could be by the boardwalk in Carinach. It could be on Frederick Street. If it is your window shopping on Frederick Street 2 o'clock in the morning, the police can simply ask of you. That is irregular. I mean, most people operate between 8 to 4. So if you're working evenings, you work between 4 and let's say midnight. But I would say irregular would be in the course of the middle of the night, unless you're a security officer. What are you doing on window shopping 2 o'clock in the morning? So And irregular, that is, irregular simply means hours when persons are not known to be in public spaces.
All right. Based on your assessment there, I hope that cleared it up. Let me listen to this.
Davy, if there's 50, these 50 persons that were arrested and detained during the SOE were known criminals for known activities, and you arrest them and some were released, means you don't have evidence. You're speculating.
I was about to bring that point to you, Farid, because you're saying I'm known. So under the SOE, you detain me because I am known to be... You have knowledge that I involve in certain things, right? Now, remember, it's not what you know, it's what you could prove, eh? You have said that time and time again. You may know somebody doing something, but you can't prove it. So it's not what you know, it's what you could prove. So I am known...
So that's why I'm cutting across you. That is why it is you have a state of emergency. Because you have a lot of persons who are known to be involved in things, but they operate that fine line between in those gray areas where you can't really get them on anything.
But that is the point. So you hold me during the SOE, you still ain't get me on nothing. Because even though you hold me during the SOE, right, I still operating between the gray lines or what you just described. But you still can't convict me. You still can't really bring a serious charge. I will stand up in court. And if you bring a fictitious charge, as you mentioned, you pull back a little bit. When the police hold your hand, you pull your hand. You didn't run. You just pull your hand and you stand up and you watch the police. Like, what are you doing? He tell you what he's doing, and they allow him to arrest you. They could still charge you for resisting because you just move your hand. When they try to hold your hand, you move it because you're watching them. So the thing is,
to zeroing on what the caller say, although you're known to the police, right? You're known to be involved in something criminal, but they would have had information that you perhaps was in the midst of something that you were at in and around this time frame. Remember, when they declared the state of emergency, 6 persons died that weekend. 5 in Prisgaland, and 1 was gunned down by the Bessel Street Police Station in East Port of Spain.
Yes.
There was heightened criminality in and around that time period. We were approaching 100 murders for the quarter,
mm-hmm.
January into the end of March. In fact, that would have been, it was declared on the 31st of December, so it was really that period, September into December.
Right.
So because of that, and when we bear in mind September into December 2024, look where the murder targets were. We were already 500 plus murders. So we were in a position where, because of the information they would have been getting from the strategic services, from the national security, from their own investigative material, these persons known to be involved in criminality, under the normal investigative process, they may not have been able to arrest them. So what they did is they arrested some of them using the tool of declaring a state of emergency in order to avoid or in order to prevent further criminality that the police are of the belief that they are involved in or are of the belief that they are the major players in. So being known is one thing, but it's known to be big players in the game of crime.
But still...
So it's not just because you have a big reputation, right? You're involved in gang 6, 7, 8, 9, or you're involved or your name is a certain Islamic name you carry, that we just arrest you. It's that we have information, but we simply may not have intelligence, but we don't have we don't know the actual circumstances in which you operate. So you may know that there's going to be an attempt on a man's life this weekend, but you already don't know the dynamics of when it's going to happen, what you know the persons who
name calling
marked to execute.
So in other words, your name calling, that is the intelligence basically, you know, your name calling. We hearing that you is the big man down here, you running the show. Intelligence have shown us this, but if the intelligence is giving us one set of information, why is it not we not gathering enough intelligence where we can seriously convict you before the courts? Time and time again, we recognize the flawed circumstances of humankind. And I say that across the spectrum because, again, out of 10 things that we need to convict you, we probably need 2.5 to arrest you and charge you. So we arrest you.
It's easier to arrest somebody, and it's much more difficult in order to gather evidence that is relevant and admissible.
So what's the difference between detaining and arresting? Is it not the same?
Because in reality, a detention is an arrest. When you detain someone, it's because you have the belief that they committed something, or they are about to commit a crime, or they are committing, or they have committed a crime, and you detain them. And to detain somebody is to suspend their rights. But you can detain for questioning and choose not to arrest. In other words...
Whoa. Fareed, back it up. You now said you could... So wait. You now said something there, and I want to be clear because I don't want nobody who's saying I'm going to attack you right now to be confused. You just said to detain somebody is to suspend movement, which is arresting the person. And then you just said that you could detain them for questioning. So you're suspending them, their movements, but then you could arrest. So that's the contradiction there that I believe some people are getting.
If it is, I stop you in the road.
Right.
And I have reason to believe that, you know, you ought not to, you seem to be up to something.
Mm-hmm.
In questioning you, I might realize, I might develop a basis for suspecting you're about to commit a crime. So at that stage now, me detaining you there may result in arrest because questions upon detaining you reveal that you're really up to no good or you're about to commit a crime and therefore I have to arrest you.
All right.
You can detain somebody for questioning and you could detain them and after questioning determine that you need to place them under arrest because they're involved in something criminal or they're about to commit a crime.
So then it is clear. Can we clearly state that detaining someone is not the same as arresting the person, but they carry the same similarities in terms of suspension of free movement?
Well, right. Both of them involve suspension of their movement. One is temporary and one may be more than temporary if they decide to arrest you.
So when the commissioner of police was detained, that could not have been considered an arrest.
It may not have been considered an arrest unless they have reason to believe she was actually involved in something that warrants investigation.
So according to law, and I feel you're coming back with me, you know, you're coming back. According to law, the legislation of the land, detention of somebody's person, you detain somebody. The difference with the arrest and detention is the time frame. One is temporary and one can be what? So is it that right. When I detain you, I didn't read your Miranda rights? But under arrest, that's when I read your Miranda rights? Is that the distinction between the two? Because it's a little
confusing. That is one aspect of it. You can detain somebody for questioning. And after questioning them, you determine that there's no reason to believe that they're doing anything criminal or about to embark on something criminal and you release them. So once you detain them to question them, the police is entitled to detain and question individuals and release them if it is they are form the view that they're not up to something criminal.
So here's the thing. Detention.
And if it to tie your question in, if it is, however, when they detain you and they question you, they believe that you're involved in something criminal, at that point, they review your rights. As in, you have the right to an attorney. You have the right to
remain silent.
Inform your attorney that you're under arrest, and you have the right to silence. And you have the right, and they explain to you that if it is you choose not to say anything, it is your right to remain silent. And if you choose to say something, whatever you say may be taken in writing and used in evidence against you. So the reading of rights, what you refer to as Miranda rights, we don't have that the expression. We don't have Miranda rights in the American form existing here. What we have is what we call the judge's rules, which is a facet of Miranda rights. But it's the same, it's the spirit of it is the same, meaning that you must explain why you detain the individual and then you must explain to them what are their rights in this detention. And you must explain to them that they're not only detained, but they're under arrest and the reason for being under arrest. If it is you're detained and they tell you you're under arrest, but they don't explain to you the reason for being under arrest, then that detention is unlawful. You must be explained the reason for detaining and arresting
you. You must be. So, okay. So once they detain you for questioning, they have to tell you why they're detaining you. And this detention does not have a legislative time frame when they detain you. Because they're arresting you. They could arrest you, and according to judicial review, it is of the court's opinion that 2 days, 24, 48 hours is sufficient. But that is not law. So that is an arrest without charge. So I arrest you, you're under arrest. You have the right to remain silent, to read what you call your judge's, what, rights?
Judge's rules.
Judge's rules. So they hit you your judge's rules in Trinidad and Tobago, and they put you in Bessel Street Station in a cell. So you're under arrest now, and they read your judge's rules, and then you ask, why am I under arrest? And they say, well, for breaking and enter, or motor vehicle larceny, or even murder. They tell you what it is. But then, while you're under arrest, and they're telling you why they have you under arrest, they question you. This is under arrest, eh? They question you, and they realize, nah, boy, like you mentioned, the guy was in Tobago, wherever. All right, not you. Sorry about that. That could take 7 days. That could take 2 weeks. Because legally, legislatively, based on what you said, there's no time frame. So I could hold you. I could go home. I could go on a vacation in Tobago and rest myself in Antigua as the arresting officer, and then come back home. And then come and chat and decide, let me go through this. In the meantime, for the next 7 days, while I go on Antigua with my wife and children, you in a cell in Maloney Station or La Arqueta waiting for me, because when they call, they say, well, the officer is unavailable at this time. When I come back 7 days later, I question you. I now realize, well, you know, nah, boy, I hold you wrong. That is basically what you're telling me, you know, for it.
And that is the issue. There are persons who have been arrested and they've been kept in custody 3 weeks at a station, 2 weeks at a station. When it is you don't have a lawyer, right, the police could keep you for whatever period they feel. Now, when you have a lawyer,
that's frightening.
The lawyer could file a writ of habeas corpus. A writ of habeas corpus is where you write to the you write a letter to the Attorney General of Trinidad and Tobago and the police and CCB, the Commissioner of Police, indicating that Davy Murray was arrested on Friday around 6 p.m. on Frederick Street. He was taken into the care of police officers and his house that is in Vincent Street Police Station, CID. And you're writing the Commissioner of Police and you're CCing the AG, vice versa, to inform them that this is the situation. And as his lawyer, as the lawyer of Davy Murray, I wish to inform the powers that be that the family has visited the station, have made inquiries as to why it is they arrested him, and they say this is a police investigation, please leave the station.
Yeah.
In other words, the police have not offered anything factually to assist them as to the reasoning behind keeping it. And also, you as the attorney went to the station, you've been asking about, you've been allowed to see a client, but you haven't been able to see the investigator involved. The investigator is on 2 days leave. He arrested a client, he put him in a cell, and then he takes 2 days off. So this, and the police at the station is saying that, the investigator isn't here. He was simply arrested and brought to this station. We were told he was here on inquiries. When we checked the log, he was brought in on inquiries, but we can't inform you as to what's happening because we weren't the ones that arrested him. So what the lawyer can do at that point in time is, having written to the police commissioner informing him that his client was arrested and 2 days have passed, you can then write to the criminal registry of the High Court of Trinidad and Tobago, indicating that you're seeking an audience with the judge in order to have the police summons before the court, and a representative from the Attorney General summons before the court to come before a judge with and produce Davy Murray, meaning the arrested individual, and explain to the court the reason for the detention of the person and the suspension of their rights, their liberty. So you can though you can be kept for an indefinite, inordinate period of time whilst the police are investigating, you as a citizen has the right to file a writ of habeas corpus, which is nice, fancy legal term that speaks to seeking an audience before a judge. And if the judge, having brought the police and before the court, meaning the police who arrested you, and the police cannot justify the reason for holding you this long, meaning 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, the judge can order that you be released. So basically, there is redress when you're arrested, but you must be able to afford an attorney in order to seek some sort of redress or to acquire your freedom.
Fareed.
It's as simple as that.
Fareed.
We don't have legislation. The Law Reform Committee has not seen it fit to pass legislation or to pass into law definite time frames in which an individual could be detained. And we haven't copied the English model of you can only hold me for 24 hours and you must apply for more time before a court to detain me further.
Fareed.
Your only redress is to file a writ through your attorney if you can afford one.
Fareed, I am sorry to say, have just described a very, very fearful thing to persons in this country. That is not an easy thing. What you just said there, it is damning information, and it certainly has, people are messaging me, it has struck fear enough. Police basically have this authority given to them that they can, for want of a better term, if they want to harass you, they can. That's basically what it is. Because I remember in 2009, I remember the year exactly, where I remember the officer who spoke to me too. And I remember him saying to me, and folks, this is so scary. We really need to get different legislation in this country and laws to help citizens, law-abiding citizens. That if police want to target you because you was with a woman, or witty woman or something like that, he can simply create something, concoct something that he knows can't stand up in court and have you arrested. You're arrested, you're charged, and you're going before a magistrate and you have to get bail. And you had to go to court for the next year and a half while he might hit and miss a few, saying that they didn't get the evidence, they're still working on it. And when the magistrate get fed up and your lawyer get fed up and say, this is overdoing it now, at the magistrate's discretion, they dismiss the case. But you would have spent money because every appearance your lawyer charges you, you up and down in the system, and you can't miss court as the defendant because you can be arrested on a warrant and your bail revoked. But the officer, as you write, well, when the prosecutor said, well, ma'am, the officer is on vacation at this time, or he's on injury leave at this time, we have, and Fareed, what are we doing as citizens? What is really happening? Because that is frightening, you know. We so like the Westminster system. We so like the Law Lords of London. Why haven't we adopted that policy of the 24 hours and you had to apply for another one? Because when you had to go through the whole nine thing to get this thing, you go do your work better. So there's no accountability to officers when they take Fareed Ali or Davy Murray into custody. And that is scary. I have a call on the line. Hello, good morning. Good morning. All right. Fareed.
I remember some years ago, there was a case where I was at the court and they read a charge to an individual he had a place. So when you hear the charge of on so-and-so date and so-and-so time in a public place, notably the Tunapuna market, he exposed himself. That is what the charge read. When the magistrate asked the individual whether he was guilty or not guilty, he said guilty without cause. So they said, well, there's no such thing as guilty without cause. It's either you're guilty or not guilty. If you're guilty, then you're guilty. If you're not guilty, you're not guilty. So you have to choose one. There's nothing as guilty at all, of course. He said, well, if I may be permitted to talk, I was simply peeing on a lamppost. Peeing against a lamppost. And the officer approached me and asked me what I'm doing there. He said, I told him, wait, look like I'm doing that, peeing on a lamppost. But the officer didn't like the way he said that the officer didn't like the way he approached him and the answer he got, and proceeded to charge him for exposing himself in a public space. That's a criminal charge, a summary criminal charge. But the exposing simply means that he took out his business in a place that is deemed generally the public space. And pee in a lamppost, the lamppost is not a urinal, it's not a toilet, it's not a private space. So if you decide to pee in an open savanna, as most males do, or you can't hold this thing any further, you're peeing on a wall somewhere, you could be charged with exposing yourself in a public space. That's an example of the wide discretion police officers have. They can charge you for just about everything or anything that they choose. They can find something to charge you for. In the same way that I gave you an example earlier where they can charge you for loitering, if you can't offer a reasonable explanation for why you're in a particular place. You're walking in Victoria Gardens in Diego Martin. You're taking a random walk through Gulf View in San Fernando. You're walking through West Moorings. In a residential place, but you don't live there. You can't just randomly go for a walk in these big shot areas. If they question you and they ask you what you're doing here, because they profile you, and a black man will be in these kind of these communities, it'll be in Bayside Towers. So you're either working there as a cleaner or you're up to no good.
So what if you house view? You know, you might park up your car and you take a little stroll through because maybe you're looking for ideas, you're doing some renovations, or you want to do some renovations home by you. I personally have driven through the same West Moorings, down Gulfview, and West Moorings, Port of Spain area, and down Gulfview. And I look at somebody, you know, I'm going to do something, but I pass through the area, and I'm just watching some of the houses, some of the landscaping, you know, and ideas just coming through my mind. So if I'm stopped and I tell the police, well, you know, I'm just working for landscaping ideas, I'm just taking a stroll, walking. But where you live in? Well, I live up in the east, but I came down to the mall and I got what I needed to get. So I just decided to walk through the area, find it look nice, and I'm walking through. I could be arrested for loitering. That is not, could that be deemed as reasonable?
Well, that's a reasonable explanation. Eh? In all honesty, what you've done is you've explained that, you know, you admire the architecture and you like how the landscaping is done in this community. And that's a reasonable explanation. But the police could simply say, okay, sir, I think you did enough perusing for the day. There are people living in these houses that would feel uncomfortable if you're pulling up in front of their premises and looking in, because they may not know that you're landscaping, that you're looking at their landscaping, or you're admiring the Greek architecture. And they may call the police, or they may simply approach you with a firearm, thinking that you're somebody who are threatened to their person and their property. So you're creating a risk for yourself when you're just randomly doing what you're doing. What you may be able to do, if you want to be correct, is perhaps ring the doorbell and tell them that, you know, I'm just admiring your property. Don't think I'm up to no good here. But you can't just randomly walk into people's spaces and not be able to explain.
Farid, you're saying people's spaces, right? I ain't going in your yard, you know. I'm walking in the area. I'm walking down the street. I'm on the government's road, not even on the pavement. I'm on the side of the road, just walking, and you're just looking in the yard, you're just looking around, and you're just looking and admiring. You ain't taking no pictures. You ain't take out a phone, and you just watch, and you tell yourself, I like that plant.
You're on the government road watching that private property.
Why? What wrong with that?
Well,
is that a law? Is this a decision to watch private property? Only government property you could watch?
If it is, you're causing persons to feel uncomfortable with your peering and peeping and perusing.
Okay.
They don't know in the climate that we live in, mm-hmm. where people are targeting persons of a certain social standing, or people who they believe have money.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have young children. They don't know if you're a pedophile. They don't know if it is you're looking to have.
So because you don't
you're
know.
You're poaching the property.
But you see, again, that is left to speculation. There is no facts to show that I am a pedophile or I come in to rob the place.
Right. So that is why it is the police will ask questions of you, and you ought to explain yourself. And if they figure that the answers you're giving aren't copacetic, as we say, right? The answer isn't reasonable. Then they could arrest you, you know, for loitering. Once you provide a reasonable explanation, and I'm saying that the mere fact that they're looking at the people's property with a view to architectural design, or you're looking at it for a defined purpose, you are, your intention is not criminal, then you're within the law, so they may not be able to take you for loitering. But they may be able to tell you, listen, what you're doing here is not the type of community that people would welcome this sort of thing. So you perhaps need to leave.
But if you're the child and you're not leaving because you have broken no laws, you have given a reasonable explanation why you're there and what is happening, and you decide, well, I appreciate the advice, but I have broken no laws, and I'm just continuing my walk down the street. I'm on the roadway. I do have a pick foot in my hand. I ain't have a bowl cutter.
Yeah, no housebreaking.
No housebreaking apparatus. I don't have any illegal properties on me, meaning an illegal firearm, a knife. I have my phone, my ID, some money in my pocket. My car parked in the mall, and I'm just walking through, watching. But you need to leave because how you mean I need to? You see, that's what I'm trying to get, because police can get up in the feelings in a hurry. They get up in the feelings. And when they get in the feelings now, they charge you on emotions, how they feel. Like the man who was peeing on the lamppost, relieving himself against the post. All right?
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, I'm just playing devil's advocate. These are real situations. Eh? I'm not leaving. I have broken no laws. You are harassing me, officer. You asked me a question. I answered you. I've broken no laws. There is no reason. I'm not loitering. I ain't standing up in front of nobody's house. You see, you may have observed me from the top of the street, pass through, just walking, going. And I tell you what I was doing. Well, leave now.
Let's relate that. Let me relate that briefly to you. Have the right to under Section 4A of the Constitution to life, liberty, security of person, and enjoyment of property. Right? You as a homeowner have the right to life and liberty and your enjoyment of your property which you've invested in. But if it is your freedom of movement, you have the right under Section 4G to freedom of movement. So you decide to walk through my community. Your right to freedom of movement should not in any way infringe my right to the enjoyment of my property.
But
has to be a balance.
You in your mansion, you know? You in your house and your yard protected, I in the road walking so pal. Me ain't touch you, I ain't even threaten you, nothing gesturing. You have all your cameras, you could watch me. So it's not to say I am passing there every single day. This is a one-off situation, you see me. And you never see me after that.
But just the law is a balancing act.
Your property is not the road.
Nobody has a right in itself that you could freely move from one place to the next. And that right allows you to walk anywhere you want. They must balance your right to freedom of movement against somebody else's right to enjoyment of property. Let me use a popular example. You remember when Basil Pandey referred to a certain media personality as a pseudo-racist?
Yes.
He said a pseudo-racist is not a real racist. It's a man who uses his own people for economic gain. Right? That was Pandey's explanation. That's how the man may not... A pseudo-racist is not a real racist. It's a man who uses his own people, right, for the enhancement of his own economic situation.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, to make money.
To make money on them, yeah.
Right. And that particular media magnate took offense by that. Pandey is saying he said back then that what he meant when he said what he said was not in itself intended to defame that man's character. But the man's argument when he brought a suit against Basil Pandey was that I have commercial worth and I am seen as a respectable businessman. When you say that I make my money on the backs of people of my race, what you're really trying to say is that I'm not a legitimate businessman. I'm an opportunist. An economic opportunist who just seek to make money on anybody's back. Money is my priority. And in other words, you dishonor the core function of him being a media magnate or a journalist. So the court, and this is where we are, the court in balancing Pandey's right to freedom of expression must consider the media magnate's right to equality of treatment before the law and his right to life and liberty and enjoyment of property.
Okay.
So Pandey's expressions was an infringement of his right to life and liberty.
Okay.
So that balancing takes place. So to marry it into what you're saying, that you're free to walk in the people community, your freedom of movement must not in any way cause uncomfortableness and cause persons to feel that they can't enjoy their property in the way that they have the right to privacy.
All right. Fareed, I thank you very much for the time spent this morning. I am telling you again, as I told you in the past, we coming back. Still lobbying for that law show with you and I. We're definitely going to have more to talk about. And I truly like the way we are able to go into depth, in depth with some of the conversations and truly clear up some of the misconceptions out there. And I know I have a ton load of messages, but we can't get to all. If I tell you a ton load for it, a ton load of messages coming in. So I thank you very much. I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day and we will be in touch very soon. All right? Have yourself a good one.
Okay. I'm happy to be of assistance. Thank you. Enjoy your day.
Same to you.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.